It's the Criterion. It's the Criterion. 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 And Project.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Criterion Project, the podcast where we talk about movies in the Criterion Channel or the Criterion Collection or both. I am Conrado Falco, and with me, as always, is the wonderful Rachel Wagner. How you doing, Rachel?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. We are talking today about the Oxbow. Wait a minute. No, we are talking about Thelma and Louise. Even though last episode we said we'd be talking about the Oxbow incident, it's the, I think, second time that something like this has happened to us, where the movie we were going to talk about suddenly disappeared from the channel before we were able to talk about it. I guess we didn't do our homework properly, or at least I didn't do it, since it was my pick.
Sometimes it's hard to tell. They don't always, it can be a little random with what's going on and off.
They have a section that usually says leaving at the end of the month, but you know, sometimes there's a lot of movies in that section. It's hard to know when they're leaving, when they're not. And so it gets a little tricky, but we pulled the emergency brakes and we got Thelma and Louise out of the, you know, back pocket just in time to talk about it.
Which I had never seen. So I was really excited to get a chance. It was one of those bucket list movies that I hadn't had a chance to see yet. So I was very
fantastic,
excited.
Fantastic. Yeah. But before we get into the movie, though, let's talk a little bit about stuff we've been watching, as we usually do. So Rachel, do you have any movies that you'd like to talk about?
Yeah, I just started, at the time of this recording, we just started the Toronto International Film Festival, their digital festival. It's been a bit of a mess of a rollout, but hopefully by the time that this airs, everything will be going smoothly and it'll be great. But I did get a chance to watch a movie called As in Heaven. This is directed by Tia Lindberg, and I think it's definitely a Criterion-ish type of release. It's an indie, a period piece set in the 1800s in Denmark. It's about this young woman who's named Liesel, who's 14, and her mother is having a baby. And it's a very difficult pregnancy, difficult delivery. So if you're not one that likes like birthing stories, this is not the movie for you, because there's some pretty intense 19th century birthing situations going on. But it was beautiful. This is an absolutely beautiful movie. It reminded me of Days of Heaven as far as the cinematography and just how beautiful it is. And I thought that it's a slice of life kind of a story. It's very the kind of thing you see at festivals. There's not a ton of plot here, but I still thought that the characters were warm and inviting and interesting. And her kind of having to be sort of this mini mom for all of her siblings was definitely something, you know, I always connect with that kind of story, because that was basically my family. My mom was, and just that sense of fear and what's going to happen. And obviously it was way different then in the, you know, with the medical care then compared to when my mom was having babies when I was a teenager. But nevertheless, I still felt some of that anxiety and some of that fear and what was going to happen to your mom and everything. Is everything going to be okay? And all of that emotions I had connected with in the movie. So I really thought it was a lovely little film. And considering it's her, the filmmaker, it's her debut, Tia Lindberg, it's her debut. I think it was a strong debut, I would say.
Interesting. So, what was the name of the movie again?
It's called As in Heaven.
As in Heaven. All right.
Yeah, keep an eye out for it. I thought it was pretty good.
All right. Well, I thought that I would talk about the movie that we were originally supposed to talk about, because I did see on Criterion Channel the Oxbow incident while it was on. And this is a Western from 1942 directed by William Wellman. and it stars Henry Fonda and I can't remember who plays the other guy, but Henry Fonda is kind of this guy, you know, classic Western hero, like roaming the West, and then he gets to this town where he used to live once upon a time, and he gets just in time for one of the most beloved citizens of the town to have disappeared, and people think people say he's been murdered. So they form a posse and they go out to find him, even though they are not sure about the evidence of who exactly killed him. They go out and they find a group of roamers, one of which is played by Dana Andrews, the other by Anthony Quinn, and there's a third one played by an actor whose name I can't remember at the top of my head, even though he's really good in the movie. Anyway, they find them and they decide something's fishy about them, and they put two and two together and they say, okay, these are the guys who murdered our friend, so we have to punish them. And it becomes a really, it's a very short movie and it's a very spare movie about kind of, you know, mob mentality and justice and what and how the law should work and that kind of thing. So it's kind of like an intellectual type of Western, and you know, I think just based on that synopsis, the people listening can probably imagine where the thing goes, and it doesn't go in anywhere surprising, which I think some people could see as a flaw, and I definitely thought about it at moments, but then at the end it just hits you so hard that I think that the fact that you know where it's going, and the people in the movie, Henry Fonda, who seems to be like, you know, a pretty decent guy, he knows what is wrong about what's going on, he knows what should be done, but nobody actually does it, and it's just this thing of like seeing how the car is going to crash almost, or the train is going to crash, and everybody knows it, but nobody really does anything about it, and that makes it all the more heartbreaking. So, I think it's a really powerful movie in a lot of ways, and I would recommend that if that sounds like something that people might be interested in.
Yeah, I had never heard of this movie until you had mentioned talking about it on the show. I still haven't had a chance to see it because when I sat down to watch it, that's when we realized it was gone.
Mm-hmm.
But I definitely am intrigued, and I will definitely check it out.
Yeah, it's a very interesting structure to the movie too, because it sets things up as a typical Western, and you're expecting, or at least I was expecting, like, you know, a bit of an adventure of something. And it sets up all the characters like that, but then it just kind of turns into this other thing and becomes almost like a play in which like all the characters are talking about what should they do, and it becomes kind of very tragic and sad in its own way. It hit me very strongly, actually. I think it's very good.
That's cool. That's great when you can find films in genres and they maybe aren't your favorite genres, but then you find one that you like. Because I think that there are movies for anyone in any genre, and you just have to find the right one. And I like that when I find like a horror movie that I like, because I don't normally like horror movies. So it's exciting to find something in a genre that's normally not my favorite.
Yeah, I do usually like Westerns. How about you, Rachel? Oh, yeah. Is it not your favorite?
Or... No, it's not my favorite.
Yeah, okay.
But I do have some I like. I love Stagecoach. I think that's great. I like High Noon. Okay. I really liked The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance. I thought that was really good.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So there's some that I like. I recently watched The Wild Bunch, though, and I did not like that at all.
Well, that's a little violent, I think, for your wheelhouse.
Yeah, I did not like any of those characters at all.
Well, okay, sure. Yeah, that yeah, too.
They were terrible. But yeah, that one wasn't for me. So yeah, it's just, I don't know. There are some that I like, though. So
yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right how it is with every genre. It's really a matter of, you know, how what you do with it then more so than anything else.
Yeah, definitely. So very good. Well, I guess we now it's time to talk about Thelma and Louise, huh?
Yeah, so it's Thelma exciting. And Louise from 1991, directed by Ridley Scott, written by Callie Khouri, who won an Oscar for Best Original Screenplay for the movie. It was the only Oscar win for the movie, even though it got a number of nominations, including Best Director and Best Actress for Gina Davis and Susan Sarandon. And the cast also includes Harvey Keitel, Michael Madsen, and a very young Brad Pitt in kind of his breakthrough role, playing a bandit type called JD. What can we say? It's a story about two women who are about to take a weekend trip, but then something goes wrong and they end up being fugitives of the law. Rachel, your first time viewing it, what did you think?
I liked it. I thought it was good. I thought that Gina Davis and Susan Sarandon had really good chemistry, and you were rooting for them. It's definitely an interesting movie when you think of it from our current perspective, with like Me Too and everything like that, with the whole like nobody would believe us, and I keep thinking like, is that the same now? Would we believe them, or still no? Would we not believe them? So I think it's kind of an interesting movie to think about from a current perspective.
Yeah, definitely. Because what happens is that they're on their road trip, and they're at the bar, and Thelma, who is played by Gina Davis, and she is kind of like, she has a really bad relationship with her husband. Her husband is really kind of really rude to her. Borderline abusive, I would say, but I'm not sure what the, you know, how do you exactly define that, but he is extremely rude to her, doesn't pay attention to her. We get an impression that he's probably cheating on her too. So she goes out for this weekend and she wants to have some fun. So they go to a bar and she starts having some drinks and she starts dancing with this guy who's flirting with her. And then later on, when she's pretty drunk, the guy tries to take advantage of her, tries to rape her. And then Louise kind of saves her in the last minute and actually ends up shooting the guy. I think that's one of the big cruxes of the movie, that even at the time people were talking about, like, why do they run away? You know, like, is it justified that she would just say, nobody will believe us, so let's just run away, or not? And I think you point out something very accurate, that I think that from 1991 to now, I think we have experienced a lot, and it's been in the foreground how those cases are so fraught, and how we are so willing in so many cases to not believe that sort of thing, you know, and it kind of justifies. I just think, like, the first time I saw the movie when I was much younger, I wondered about it, like, okay, I guess so, but like, would they really like be so convinced that they wouldn't believe it? And now I kind of accept it much more.
Yeah, I think that I probably would have had a similar experience. I mean, obviously, I wouldn't have watched it in 91 because I was 10. But if I'd seen it, like, say, when I was in high school, I think I might have been a little more judgy of them, as opposed to now, where I feel like, okay, I get it, why they would be skeptical of any kind of, you know, justice in that kind of a way. I think that Thelma is probably right, that they should have just told, I mean, that they really, how long are they going to be on the run, and how long, but then of course you don't have a movie. So, especially with somebody that at the least, it seems like everybody knows is kind of not a good guy, but how would they know that? They've only been in the town for one day. So.
Right. I do think that there is something about, and I think this is something that the screenwriter has talked about, like, at the time, especially trying to write a screenplay about this kind of things that she was really, you know, frustrated with, about the sexism and the way that women are treated in the world, but also needing to thread the needle because, you know, this was going to be a studio movie, and it was, there were certain things that weren't accepted back then the way they are now, you know, like the biggest thing, for example, is the ending of the movie, right? But before we go into that, which I do want to talk about, like, even though just like the very specific ways in which she has to justify the things that these women do and in which way, right? If they're going to kill a man in order for them to still be, for us to still root for them, it has to be in this way and it has to happen like this. And the men need to be in this way and they have to make these mistakes and she has to have this backstory, you know, like everything feels like very, when you think about it, I think it feels very specific and very kind of like labored. But watching the movie, I feel like I kind of just go with it. So I think that's also a strength of the performances and the direction and the writing.
Yeah. And I also appreciate that they have a balance as far as the male characters, that it's not just everybody is terrible, because Harvey Keitel's character isn't like a bad guy. He's like trying to do his job and like he kind of gets them, I feel, a little bit. And then also I think that Jimmy is an interesting character.
Mm-hmm.
Like he may not be perfect, but he's pretty supportive, I feel like. What do you think of Jimmy?
Yeah, I think you're right that there is like a almost like a scale of the men in this movie,
yeah.
Right? Like the Velma's husband is one of the worst. Then there's this other agent played by Stephen Tobolowsky who comes into the case later on, who is also really one of the worst.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you remember him. He's with Harvey Keitel towards the end, and he's the one who wants to take over the case. Harvey Keitel, like you said, is one of the best, the most sympathetic ones. He seems to be doing his job. At the end, he seems really concerned about them and trying to not get them killed, you know, trying to get them alive, trying to make a find a way so that Thelma and Louise come out alive of this situation.
And then JD is also another character.
Yeah. Even though the Harvey Keitel character does have this moment when they're interviewing the husband where he's kind of laughing at all these sexist jokes. But I do think that maybe that's just him going along to get the case solved.
Mm-hmm.
I got that sense. I don't know what you thought of that scene.
Same.
Yeah, and JD is the Brad Pitt character who's like, you know, this handsome, young, dreamy boy who kind of like hooks up with Thelma, but then ends up being kind of like he's like a drifter, so he ends up stealing their money.
Yeah.
And I agree with you that Jimmy is the most interesting character. A character that when he first appeared, I expected him to be another, you know, villainous kind of entity, but then he ends up being much more layered. And even though you get a sense in the way that he gets really upset and he starts hitting some of the furniture in that conversation with Louise, that you can sense that the relationship between them must have had, you know, like its rocky moments, and he might be prone to some certain kinds of like aggression, but he also is kind of helpful in a lot of ways and he is tender in some ways. So I think I agree with you that he was the character that surprised me the most.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was definitely unpredictable, and I thought they actually had pretty, I think, good chemistry between Jimmy and Louise in the movie. And if given a happy ending, I kind of wish that we could have gotten a happy ending for them, but obviously that's not what we get. But what do you think about the chemistry between JD and Thelma? Did you think that?
I think it works. I think it works. I think it's like an early Brad Pitt performance, and he, you know, a lot of what he's doing is just being pretty and sexy. But I think I buy it. I think it feels like kind of like the part of the movie that to me is kind of like a wish fulfillment fantasy, or like a, you know, a women's liberation kind of thing, because it really is about these two women taking matters into their own hands, having agency, going out in the road, doing the things that like men usually do in movies, and kind of like, yeah, feeling free. You know, by the end of the movie, they are fugitives from the law, but they feel like they are alive in a way that they weren't before. And I think that that relationship with Brad Pitt, especially for Thelma, who we've seen her home life be so drab, it feels really cathartic in that moment, even though it ends up being kind of a mistake in some ways.
How much older do you think Thelma, I mean, how much older do you think Louise is than Thelma in the movie? Because Susan Sarandon is 9 years older than Gina Davis.
Hmm.
And I don't know, I will go into a little bit of my thoughts when I talk about the remake, but I was curious, what do you think? Because it seemed like to me that the Gina Davis was, that Thelma was supposed to be a lot younger and more just kind of silly.
She's definitely more naive than Louise in a lot of ways. And Louise seems to have a little, it's more world weary. We know that she had a past in Texas and then she moved to wherever they are now. I don't know if it's Oklahoma or Arizona or something. And the other thing is that, yeah, I get the sense that she's supposed to be older and they don't really tell us how they met, I don't think. But my impression has always been that they probably worked together at that diner that we see Louise work at the beginning. Mm-hmm. But then Thelma got married and she stopped working there. To be a housewife, but you know, and kind of like that when they were working at the diner, probably Thelma was really young and inexperienced, and Louise must have taken her a little bit under her wing, showed her the ropes and that kind of thing. And that's how they became friends. That's kind of my fan fiction of it, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I did think that it didn't make sense that Louise would give the money to Thelma. Why? Like she, with her character, she's kind of a protector. She's kind of a little bit closed. And I was like, why would you give the money to Thelma? Like Thelma seems a little bit flighty, a little bit like, I just, that's one thing I was like, I don't know if she would do that.
Yeah. And that is definitely the biggest moment of like, whenever that scene comes around, I always feel like, oh my god, I would have killed Thelma if I was Louise in that moment. I get so upset at her for making that mistake. But you're right that it is also the element of like, it's not 100% completely believable that Louise will give her the money. So that's a good point. I feel like, yeah, it is so frustrating that I think it's, I mean, you know, it's because of how the movie goes that it needs to happen just because it you know, they need to have obstacles in their way, mm-hmm. I suppose. But it's definitely the hardest moment for me to watch in the movies when that happens. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, there's also a hard moment, like the rape scene is much, also obviously much more disturbing, but this moment is like emotionally just so, because it's their relationship and it's a moment where I really hate Thelma and I don't want to, you know, I want to like them both.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I thought the movie was really beautiful to look at. And also I thought it used music really well.
Yes. I agree with both of those things. I think the look of the movie, I really, really love. I think this cinematography is absolutely beautiful. And the landscapes of the Southwest, the way they're shot on film. I feel like, I don't know if you agree with me about this, but I feel like there's like a kind of early 90s look to the movie that some movies have. And I think like even like some advertising of the time has of like this very like beautiful film landscape look, mm-hmm. that I think this movie captures, that I feel very nostalgic for. Like, I guess people are just nostalgic for the time where they were born in many ways. But I feel like this has like almost just like a Pavlovian response from me that I really, really love the way this movie looks. It has like that postcard look to it.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think it really captures the feeling of the Southwest and sort of that I don't know, it gives a feeling of freedom that is kind of synonymous with that part of the country.
Yeah, and the cinematographer's name is Adrian Biddle, who got nominated as well, and he does an incredible job. The music, the original score is by Hans Zimmer, but they also use a lot of songs in the soundtrack. And that also has, I think, an early 90s guitar, you know, Western guitar sound to it that I also find very like nostalgic for me.
I agree.
So
I really like the, they use a lot of that sort of slide guitar and that country kind of a feel.
It's kind of like a country rock feel.
Yeah. And you could honestly picture this whole movie being a country song. And one of the great things about country music is that it's so great at storytelling. Mm-hmm. So it being a part of this movie, it just sort of adds another layer, I think, to it.
It's funny that you mentioned that, because actually one of my favorite singers is an Argentinian singer called Fito Páez, and he did a song that is basically a retelling of Thelma and Louise in song form. It's called Dos Días en la Vida, which means 2 days in the life, and it basically just recounts the plot of Thelma and Louise, and it's a beautiful song. Maybe I'll play a little bit at the end of this if people are curious to hear some of it. It's in Spanish, obviously, but you know, you can get a sense of it. What's interesting about that song too is that he kind of like goes through the plot for the beginning of it, but he doesn't really go into what happens at the end. He kind of like just in the last verse, he shifts into saying something about, it's hard to say if it actually happened, if I dreamed it, but the girls with me, Thelma and Louise, and it's kind of like I thought that's interesting because I feel like the ending has always been a bit controversial with this movie. The fact that it's an empowering story about women, and the women, Thelma and Louise, the characters, feel very empowered by the end of it, but they end up deciding basically to die on their own terms, kind of in a... It's not even like a... I guess it is a little bit like a Bonnie and Clyde situation, but I think in this case, it feels particularly poignant, them driving off the cliff and deciding to just keep going. And as the screen turns to white, it's kind of like a tragic end, but also supposed to be a somewhat cathartic end to it.
Yeah. Yeah.
What do you think of that?
I want them to have a happy ending, but I don't know if that is possible. I do think it was probably the most poetic ending for this particular story. But of course, you know, I as a optimistic person, you know, I would, it's also kind of bittersweet, I guess I would say.
Mm-hmm. It's also, I think, one of the things that has been brought up, at least it was brought up at the time a lot from what I have researched, that it was being said that people would not accept the movie if the women had gotten away with it and lived with it, you know, like almost like there was like this underlying sense that they couldn't, that they had to die at the end, which is what a lot of people have criticized about it. I do agree that, I mean, it feels realistic. I feel like in that situation, thematically for the movie, it makes some sense because it's so clear by the end that that they cannot live the way they want in this world, you know, and they will not be happy again. Like they're happy with each other, being free, driving on the road, but the world just will not accept them. So they almost transcend into this other space. But I do think that it's also kind of like, you know, it's a little disappointing that that's kind of how the movie has to go.
Yeah. They share a kiss before the ending. What do you make of that? Because we hadn't gotten a sense of necessarily them being attracted to each other. At least I don't think so.
I guess there are like some, thematic undertones in terms of like just the idea of two women on their own going at it, you know, rejecting men in a lot of ways that I think might connect with like, you know, a queer reading of the movie, which I'm sure there are a lot of, but I always thought that kiss was more of a friendly kiss of like, we've gone through this together, we're best friends, we love each other in a lot of ways. I don't find it particularly erotic. It feels almost like a goodbye kiss, you know, like this is it, we're together, we are one in this moment, kind of.
Yeah, and they say, I think it's Louise who says, something's crossed over for me. I can't go back.
Yeah. The ending is just beautiful in that way. It's so emotional for me when they're driving and then Thelma's just like, let's just keep going. And then she's like, what do you mean? Just keep going. Let's not go back. You know? And it's just kind of like, in that moment, their performance, I really feel it, like how they are making that decision and how much it means to them to not be caught.
Well, and I know you're not the biggest Ridley Scott fan, but would you say that this is his best film?
I think so. I think it's like, I was going to say, this is one of those cases in which it just tells you that you never know. Because, you know, a director that you usually don't like, there might be one movie that you really love. And I do really love Thelma and Louise. And I think for me, it's my favorite. Haven't seen Alien in a long time. I remember that being really good. So maybe that's also up there. and it's also an exception. But the other big ones I don't really particularly love. Blade Runner, I think, is the biggest one that, you know, it's a beloved classic that it just doesn't work for me.
Yeah, I admire Blade Runner more than I like it. I mean, I think it's a beautiful movie as far as, it's a very influential movie, mm-hmm. very beautiful movie, but the pacing just is not my favorite. But you gotta, the man does have a variety of movies. He's done almost every genre.
Yeah.
And so that's pretty impressive. But yeah, this is definitely one of his best. There's no question in my mind. So it's interesting. Well, I guess, should we start doing our questions?
Yeah, let's. So our first question is, I forgot that I'm hosting today. Our first question is, what is our question? Oh, what makes this a Criterion movie? So Rachel, what do you think?
I think that there's not that many sort of classic female centric stories, especially from the 90s. I feel like there's not that many. And the fact that you have an Oscar winning female screenwriter, all of that, I think that's why 2+2, pretty iconic performances. So. Mm-hmm.
And I think there's something else about it that just feels like, you know, Criterion can be a little bit or a lot a tourist in its picks. It really mm-hmm. likes, like, you know, the auteur directors. So it's nice when it also celebrates or wants to showcase a movie that to me feels like a real collaboration, you know, between a couple different strong voices. Ridley Scott obviously does a great job directing the movie, and I think he is a great director in terms of taking a script and making it the way that it's supposed to work. I feel like, to me, he's more of a journeyman than an auteur. I don't know if people will disagree with that, maybe.
No, I agree.
But you know, you have Kelly Coore, the screenwriting, and also the actors, Gina Davis and Susan Sarandon, when they read the script, they really loved it, and they really became, Ridley Scott, credit to him, made them a part of the process, and they really worked together to create these characters and create mm-hmm. this movie in a collaboration between all of them. So, and I think that comes through. I think the performances that they give, it's just really special, especially Susan Sarandon. I think she's so good in this movie, and they have, like you said, great chemistry together, and they're so fantastic. I kind of just love the characters. I root for them so hard, and I'm with them on this journey. So I really, yeah, I love the movie. I don't know what else to say.
I agree. So what would you give it on our pretentiousness scale?
That's an interesting question. Do you have an answer off the top of your head?
I don't think it's very pretentious at all. I'd give it a 2.
Oh, yeah. I was thinking the same thing. I don't think it's super, super pretentious in any particular way. Now I'm trying to think. It feels like very much a crowd pleaser in a lot of ways. It's a very crowd pleasing and commercial movie. Maybe the fact that they end up dying at the end is a little bit, you know, challenging, and it does want to say some things about society, but it does so in like a genre style. Mm-hmm. You know, it is at the end of the day like a road trip, semi action crime movie. And it is like a buddy film. So yeah, I think a 3 or something like that would be okay with me.
Like, I think that anybody that is comfortable watching an R-rated film would like this movie. Like, I can't think of really anybody I wouldn't say, yeah, you'd enjoy it.
It is I think crowd pleasing is right. I would go with that word to really describe it. I think it is a movie that is made for people to connect with and enjoy.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm really excited about my remake.
Oh, yeah. This is a remake section. So this is where we're going to pitch a remake of this movie. You know, a blasphemous thing to do, but here we go. Rachel.
So Hollywood, call me, because this is a bankable idea. This is a good idea. So I think what we need to do is have a mini series about how they met and became friends, because that's the one part of the story we don't know, right?
Okay.
And I think you have Emma Stone playing Louise.
Louise, yeah, that makes sense. That's good casting for young Susan Sarandon.
Right? Yes. See? I'm so excited. I feel like they have a similar energy and a similar style. I think they would be good.
And they have a similar face, I would say. They do have certain facial similarities. So yeah, so that's good. They're both redheads too.
Yeah. And Hailee Steinfeld playing Thelma. She's super cute, super energetic. I think she would do a really good job.
I think that does sound like something that like a Netflix or so, or FX would do, right?
Like something like that, yeah.
Yeah, how come they didn't do that? Like, you know, like, why did they do this, like, Nurse Ratched backstory? That right. I don't know who wants to see that, but I would be interested in a Thelma. The only thing
it's
about
so
that...
It's so appealing. I can see the Emmys coming in right now.
Yeah.
And you can still... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
The only issue is that, I mean, I feel like they would have to fudge this for the show, but... like you couldn't have them like killing anybody, right? Or like committing any violence for the movie to work. So I'm not really sure. And it's kind of depressing how she ends up married to this guy. So I don't know, but I think you can find a way, because they always do that with this miniseries and this prequels. They just like, turns out that they did have an adventure when they were young that they didn't tell you about, you know? So maybe they will do that.
And you could get Callie Corey to write it. She's still working.
Yeah.
So,
and she's, has experience in television. She created that show Nashville that was on what was it, ABC, I think, with Connie Britton.
Yes, speaking of Connie Britton, I think she would be a perfect fit for this series
to play like one, like the mom of one of the characters, like Thelma's mom. Yeah.
It would be so good. And you could have Callie Corey's husband is T-Bone Burnett, who's great, and you could have him do the music for this series. Because he did Oh Brother Where Art Thou soundtrack, Walk the Line, Crazy Heart. He's incredible. So you can have that. You can have Rachel Morrison do the cinematography because she's incredible. And it would be so good.
All right. Hollywood, please get in touch with Rachel so that she can make this happen.
Yes. So that's my, I was very excited.
That sounds good. My thought process was that I was thinking, like, how can you remake this in a way that will have the impact now that it did in 91, you know? And I think even though there's, you know, obviously a lot to work through in America in terms of, you know, women's rights and the way that sexism and all that stuff, I would be interested in seeing a version of this movie take place in a different country, for example, and see a remake, you know, like, you know, foreign movies get remade in America all the time, but like, how about the opposite? And seeing like a version of this take place, like in South America or in Africa, you know, in a place where like some of the battles for women's liberation that have already been won in America and in other countries are still being fought, you know? So I thought maybe it could be like I thought of the filmmaker Mati Diop, who made this movie Atlantics. I don't know if you saw that, Rachel. It's a Yeah, it's a great movie, and I think that she would not only be a good fit for it, but she would do something really different because she has a very particular voice and style to her movies. Maybe she would even bring a supernatural or like a very artistic element. So that would be, I think, higher up in the potential to scale, but it would be a movie that I would be interested to see a take on it from in a different cultural context.
Yeah, I think that would be good. I'd like that. Yeah, that would be good. All right. Yeah, they should definitely.
So Thelma and Louise, we recommend it. Good movie. But Rachel, what are we going to be talking about next time?
Well, as my friend Ryan likes to say, we're taking a hard left.
Okay.
Thelma and Louise.
But to a familiar territory for us, which is the world of animation.
Yes. So we're going to talk about A Town Called Panic for our next next entry. And this is an absurdist, crazy animated, stop motion animated film. That I guess there's a TV show that's also in France, but this is a standalone movie. And it's, I think, extremely funny. It's these animated plastic toys of a cowboy, an Indian, and a horse, and they have problems.
Yeah, it's a very out there movie, and I think some people might be surprised when they watch it by how funny and how entertaining it is and how original it is in many ways.
Yeah, definitely. I love it. So going to be fun to talk about. And it made my top 50 animated films of all time countdown that I just recently did on my channel. So
there you go. Really good.
So yeah, that's something to look forward to.
Yeah. In the meantime, you can follow us on Twitter at Criterion Pod, and you can leave us a review on Apple Podcasts if you are kind enough to do so. Give us a good rating and a review because it'll help us find more listeners. Also, if you want to find me, you can go on Twitter at CocoHitsNY. I have another podcast that it's currently on hiatus, but it will be back soon. And if you want to hear more of me, I'm actually, probably by the time this comes out, very soon I'll be on the Robots versus Dinosaurs podcast, which I've been on before. And I'm going to be talking about Looney Tunes Back in Action, another zany animation movie. So if you want to hear me talk about my love for Looney Tunes, you could check that out.
That'll be fun. That'll be great. And you can find me at Rachel's Reviews, all over social media, iTunes, YouTube, and on Rotten Tomatoes. I'm going to be doing daily logs of everything that I view at TIFF. So if you're interested in that, make sure you check out rachelsreviews.net, where my reviews will be at. So take a look. And then also check out the Hallmarkies podcast. We are in the prep stages of getting ready to cover the holiday season. So it's an exciting time. And we're in fall harvest mode right now. So check it out.
Fantastic. All right, Rachel, let's jump in my Thunderbird and let's ride into the sunset.
Woohoo!